This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more details, see jodcast.net.
Well, the night sky in March this year. Let's start with the stars. I've talked about the wonderful skyscape that you see just after sunset, centred on the constellation of Orion. You have Taurus up to its right, Canis Major down to its lower left, Gemini up to the left of Orion. Now, if you want to learn more about that part of the sky that you see in the early evening, why don't you try going back to the segment about the night sky last month and the month before when I talk about them in some detail. So let me just briefly say something about the stars that you begin to see, let's say, in the later part of the evening. In fact, now it's not really that late. Over to the lower left of Gemini, if you're looking to the southeast, shall we say, at about 10 o'clock in the evening, you have that rather lovely constellation of Leo the Lion. It's rather like the lions in Trafalgar Square, which are squatting on their haunches. Sometimes it's called the question mark, the head of the lion, the mane. And that drops down to his four knees, I suppose, where we have the star Regulus, which is the brightest star, obviously, in that constellation. Alpha Leonis is another name. Over to the lower left of Leo is rising the constellation of Virgo. To be honest, there's not an awful lot to see with your eyes. There's only one bright star called Spica. But between the tail of Leo and Spica, there's a wonderful part of the sky to observe with telescopes. It's called the realm of the galaxies. And in that direction, we're looking towards the largest cluster of galaxies in our vicinity, not surprisingly called the Virgo cluster. And there may be 1,000 galaxies there. It is, in fact, the heart of a supercluster, which is surrounded by smaller clusters, and then further out still, groups of galaxies like our own local group, of which our own Milky Way galaxy and the Andromeda galaxy are the two largest members, perhaps about 40 to 50 members in our local group. We're right on the outskirts of that Virgo supercluster. So this is a place with a 6-inch telescope or even bigger, you can see myriads or many, many galaxies. One other thing to point out, again, not so obvious to your unaided eye. If you go from the stars of Gemini and work your way across to Leo, again, that's a pretty blank part of the sky. You pass through the constellation of Cancer the Crab, and there aren't really any particularly bright stars. But do sweep across there with binoculars, because you will find a rather lovely little cluster, very large open cluster of stars. It's called the Beehive Cluster or Praesepe, and it's a very nice object to observe in binoculars. Below that is the constellation of Hydra, but again, there's nothing particularly obvious to see there. But if you sort of work upwards over towards the north, you come, of course, to Ursa Major, again, one of the most well-known of the constellations. Now, in fact, Ursa Major is the Great Bear. We tend only to think and talk about part of it, which we call the plough in the United Kingdom. The Americans call the Big Dipper, and that apparently was the ladle that the farmhouse wife used to use to ladle out soup for the farm workers when they came in for their lunch. So it's a big ladle, but we call it the plough. And that's a very nice part of the sky to look at. The two stars at the right-hand side of the plough are called the pointers. They point up towards the pole star. And if you look with binoculars at the tail, the second to the end star with binoculars, you'll see is in fact a double star. It's called Alcor and Mizar, the horse and rider. If you look at that with a small telescope, in fact, the brighter itself is a double star, and you also pick up a rather faint red star, making a rather nice triangle. It's a very nice little bit of the sky to look at, both with binoculars and with a small telescope. So let's move on to the planets. Well, we'll start perhaps in order of size. Jupiter is the brightest of the planets, quite often, except, of course, for Venus. But although it's now moving further away from the sun in the pre-dawn sky, the elevation is still very low. The problem is that the plane of the ecliptic, that's along which you actually see the planets, is inclined at a very shallow angle to the eastern horizon in the morning. And although we have, in fact, Jupiter, Mars, and Mercury all in that part of the ecliptic, they're only a few degrees above the horizon. In fact, Jupiter might be 7 degrees above the horizon towards the end of the month. So you probably would need binoculars and a very good low eastern horizon. A little bit at magnitude minus 2.1, so that's pretty bright. A nice time to look for it actually is on the 22nd and 23rd of the month, when you'll see it very close to a waning thin crescent moon. On the 22nd, it'll be to the left of the moon, on the 23rd, to the right. So perhaps that's a rather nice time to try and look for it, the 22nd and 23rd of the month. Jupiter will gradually move away from the sun and be higher in the sky over the next 3 months, but really this isn't the best time to observe it. In complete contrast, Saturn is now, again apart from Venus, the best placed planet in the sky. And it's rising basically about 7:30 at the beginning of the month and by sunset towards the end. It's lying below Leo the Lion. There's a little bit of Leo as a constellation that dips down quite far south into the two adjacent constellations below. And that's exactly where you'll find Saturn at the moment. It's the brightest object in that part of the sky. Its magnitude about 0.5. It's not as bright as we normally see it, and that's because the rings are almost edge on. This month they have a tilt of about 2.8 degrees. That's going to wobble around a bit during the year, but in September they will in fact, I think, go edge on and they'll disappear completely. So that's a nice planet to look at. It doesn't look quite as spectacular as you sometimes see it, but nevertheless, Saturn is an easy object to observe at the present time. Now Mercury, that's currently moving away from us, and it's going to be on the far side of the Sun. That's called Superior Conjunction on the 31st of March. So at the very beginning of March, there is a chance of seeing it just before dawn. It'll be about 2 degrees above the horizon, so you'll certainly need binoculars. And as I said, because the ecliptic is such a low angle, it's not the best time to observe it. So probably it's not a good month to try. Mars is pretty much in the same boat as Jupiter. It's 21 degrees away from the Sun as March begins, and it will have a magnitude of about 1.2, which isn't too bad. Over the month, the separation increases to 28 degrees, but nevertheless, it'll only be about 4 degrees above the horizon as the Sun rises. So it'll tend to be lost in the glare of the Sun. And again, better wait a month or two to give it a chance to get further away from the Sun. Well, you can't fail to spot Venus. It's been dominating the western sky for the last month, and it's still very high, at magnitude minus 4.5. You just cannot miss it. I saw it beautifully last night. Now, during the month, Venus is getting closer to the position of the Sun. It's coming actually towards us. Its angular size is getting bigger. At the same time, the crescent that we see is getting thinner. It's a lovely thing to look at with a small telescope. So week by week this month, it'll be lower and lower in the sky. And in fact, by the 20th of the month, it will be quite hard to spot in the glare of the Sun. So use the next couple of weeks, if there are clear nights, to have a good look at Venus. And do try to look with a telescope, if you can, to see the phase. It was Galileo's observations showing how the phase changed of Venus, and specifically, you could see it at almost full phase, that proved it was orbiting the Sun, not the Earth. And hence the Copernican idea of the solar system was correct and the Ptolemaic idea was wrong. Okay, well, we don't really have many highlights this month, but there is a comet still in the sky. On the 23rd of February, it passed just below Saturn. Sadly, in the UK, we were totally cloud-covered. But it was visible, in fact, last night as I read this out to you, and a colleague of mine, Andrew Greenwood, from the Macclesfield Astronomical Society, had a very good view of it, as it basically was coming towards the star Regulus, below Regulus. And on the night sky guide, just put night sky into Google, you'll find it, I've put a chart that shows you the position of the comet over the first 11 days of the month. As it's now moving away from the Earth, in fact, it'll become less bright. So do try and look early on. It's moving quite quickly, and I should say that if you go onto the Sky and Telescope website, you can find more detailed star charts to help you locate it. It was fairly bright and obvious, a little bit of a tail showing in good binoculars last night, so hopefully we'll still be able to see it for a couple of weeks or so. Because the ecliptic in the evening is inclined at a high angle to the horizon, which is why Venus is appearing so high in the sky, it does give us a chance to see a very thin crescent moon, just about 27 hours after new moon. It's very hard to spot the moon much sooner than that. What you need to do is to go out and have a look on the 27th of March. If it's clear, look just north of west, touch north of west, above where you'll see the glare of the sun. Perhaps don't look hard until the sun has set so you can't damage your eyes. But if you lift up about 6 degrees from the horizon, somewhere around 6:30 on the 27th, you might well spot a very, very thin crescent. Only 1.6% of the moon's face will be illuminated. Now, I've never actually seen a moon 27 hours between from new moon. I have, however, seen and photographed one 36 hours, but that was the other way round. That was, in fact, before new moon and, in fact, the eclipse of the sun that we observed in China last year. So to see one 27 hours after new moon is quite a feat, so it's probably worth a try. I should say something for those that live in the southern hemisphere. Well, if you look to the north, then in fact you do see, in the early evening, those stars I've been talking about in the last month or so, Orion, Gemini and Taurus. They're all, of course, upside down for us. Gemini is basically due north. Below that, you might spot the bright star Capella in Auriga, just above the horizon. Above Auriga and Capella, you've got Orion, and then to its lower left, you've got Taurus with the Hyades and the Pleiades, two lovely open clusters to look at. So these are stars, of course, that we can see as well. And actually, as you go over from Gemini across to Leo, you come past the Beehive Cluster in Cancer. So a fair bit about what I've talked about, you can see as well. What, of course, we cannot see is the lovely sky looking towards the south. And rising up from the southern horizon, you have a beautiful part of the Milky Way coming up through Centaurus. Then you go through Carina and Vela. Those are now constellations which were once part of a much bigger constellation called Argo, the ship. So Vela and Carina, parts of the ship. Two bright stars, Alpha Centauri and Beta Centauri, are the pointers, and they're just towards the southeast. They point up to the Southern Cross. Over to the left, away from the Milky Way, you'll actually find a rather lovely fuzzy spot with binoculars. It's called Omega Centauri. Omega Centauri used to be thought to be a globular cluster. We have quite a large number that were formed at the time of our own Milky Way. They're sort of micro-galaxies, if you will, perhaps up to a million stars in a spherical distribution. But some of the stars in Omega Centauri look rather younger, and it's now thought it might well be the remains of a galaxy, i.e. the nucleus of that galaxy, whose outer parts were stripped off as they interacted with the gravitational field of our own Milky Way. Nevertheless, it's a very nice object. You'll easily pick it up with binoculars, and a small telescope will show it as a very beautiful object. It was a month or so ago when I was in the Southern Hemisphere looking at some of these lovely parts of the sky. I hope to be back again soon. Anyway, I do hope you enjoy looking at the sky during March. Chat to you again in a month's time.